Hello, when was the last time you really properly listened to someone? My name is Richard Kilgariff, and this is my Bokomi podcast for leaders who are readers. In this first episode, I take my best friend Alan the Whippet to meet my lifelong friend and professional listener, Fee Glover. What book does Fee want from Bokomi's most wanted list of new non-fiction? And what does that tell us about what she wants most in life? Let's have a proper listen.
Hello, darling. How long have you been there?
No, only a little while. Hello, Alan. Oh, God, if I'd brought Nancy, that would just be chaos. She can't do escalators because of the size of her arse.
I'm like that.
Should I quantify that Nancy's a dog? No, let's just leave it. No, let's leave it. We're just walking through the bowels of a constructed building with some palm trees. You've always been a bit odd, haven't you, Richard?
So we're in the basement of Whitehall Court. We're just yards from Downing Street. We've come down some iron steps off the street. And I'm with one of radio's best love voices, Fee Glover. She pioneered the Listening Project on BBC Radio 4, and her Fortunately podcast with Jane Garvey has had more than 4.5 million downloads. It's probably five now, isn't it? Fee is someone who's a lifelong friend of me, of mine, not just of other people. I worked with her as a radio reporter in the 1990s, and yet I've never asked her what she thinks have been her greatest insights and
ideas. That's because I couldn't get a word in edgeways. I mean, for 30 years I've been waiting for this opportunity. Now's my chance.
We're here to listen. Hello, Fee.
Hello, Richard.
You had to be the first person I interviewed for the podcast because I know you.
Yes, and I came.
I know you, I want to say intimately. I still feel I could know you more deeply, though, more profoundly, I suppose, through a literary lens. So, which book have you chosen from Bokomi's Most Wanted list?
So, I have chosen Kate Murphy's You're Not Listening, What You're Missing and Why It Matters. And I am fascinated by this book because it taps into absolutely everything that lies at the heart of the Listening Project. And I love everything that she has to say. And actually, if no one's heard the Listening Project, it's an oral history project that I present for Radio 4, but we're building a sound archive at the British Library purely with conversations between two people. And it's a really simple premise. You come along, you sit down with someone you love or care about, and you have a conversation that really matters. So it's totally about your life. We don't intervene editorially.
Did you meet Kate Murphy? Because I mentioned her to you when we met last time, and I met her when we did a club talk together.
So I've not met her, but I have heard her being interviewed about the book on various radio programmes since she published it. And I think what's really interesting about it is that when I've heard her speak about it, the interviewers go into questioning her in exactly the same way that we were questioned about the Listening Project when we started it, which is lots of people kind of going, ooh, what do you mean? What do you mean by listening? And because we think that we listen all the time, we think it would be a dull thing to then talk about, because it just sounds a little bit too introspective and that you wouldn't get anything from a conversation about listening. But actually what she's talking about is the true art of listening, which is different to what we do every day. We do a kind of passive form of listening in conversation and just in our daily lives, but properly listening is something very different. It just is.
She calls it competitive listening, that we've grown up competitively listening for a purpose, i.e. listening for some kind of gain or result. So that's what, should we listen to her, see what she's got to say?
Let's, yeah.
This is Kate Murphy's Omi for Bokomi.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Kate Murphy, and I'm a Houston, Texas-based journalist and frequent contributor to the New York Times. I wrote You're Not Listening because we have gotten so distracted by our devices, our noisy modern environment, and our own conversational competitiveness that we aren't listening. And it's making us isolated, insensitive, and lonely. Listening is how we learn. It's how we connect. It's how we cooperate. It's how we empathize and grow as individuals. Here's three things I know about listening. Are not listening. Insight one, great listeners make for great conversations. Researchers have found that when talking to inattentive listeners, speakers remembered less information and were less articulate in the information they conveyed. Conversely, they found that attentive listeners elicited more information, relevant detail, and elaboration from speakers, even when the listeners didn't ask any questions. Insight 2, listening is a skill. And like any skill, it requires focus and practice to do well. The more people you listen to, the more aspects of humanity you will recognize, and the better your gut instinct will be. If you aren't a practice listener, you will likely miss the point of people's stories and whiff when you respond. Insight 3, everyone can be a better listener. Just like playing a sport or musical instrument, some may have more natural ability and some may have to try harder, but everyone can benefit from making the effort.
So great listeners make great conversation. Practice makes perfect. Stops you whiffing in the conversation. Were you born a good listener, Fee? Because I was always amazed by your ears. You always had an amazing ear. I always have had an amazing ear for music as well. You're always literally in tune with sound. But have you always been a good listener with people?
So I don't think that I am a natural born listener. And I really like Kate's last two points about the fact that you really have to practice it. And I think it's one of those interesting things that journalists do have to learn. So I trained to be a journalist. I always wanted to be a journalist, but I only wanted to be a journalist on the radio. I wanted to have that listening and talking connection. And I think what propelled me into wanting to be a journalist was actually quite a massive ego. So a sense that I felt I had something important to contribute. So I've definitely had to learn to be a good listener. But I do think that you cannot be a successful journalist unless you really, really listen. And what fascinates me now is, again, Kate's other point, that we are on the receiving end of so much incoming stuff, so many different opinions, voices, sound bites, you know, whatever it is, that actually we are losing that ability to really hear what's being said because we've got this huge kind of scattergun of stuff coming at us. And the rather old-fashioned notion that you simply waited until someone had finished their sentence before you dived in, I think is really being lost in all of that noise. So I couldn't love her book more. I think it's the right book for the right time about the right things.
So that ego, that's really interesting, wanting a voice and wanting to be heard.
Yeah, but I wanted to be on the radio. That's what I really wanted when I first started thinking about my own place in the world. So, you know, when people say that they wanted to be astronauts or, you know, whatever it is, long distance runners, whatever you wanted to be, I, from the age of about 8, wanted to be on the radio. And it was that sense that what came out of the radio, I loved listening to, but I wasn't happy to just be the listener. So that is absolutely hands up an ego thing. Mm. It was only when I joined the profession and trained to be a reporter that I realised how much I did actually like listening. I really, really, really do enjoy listening to people's stories, how they say, what they say, what they choose not to say, you know, all of that kind of inquisitor stuff I really enjoys. You know, it's been a really happy place for me to work on radio.
But it's always interesting when you get into that sort of behind the Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
You know, curtain, and you meet actual people. I find that meeting, if I didn't know you, I'd be totally, having read your work and listened to you, I'd be really nervous about meeting someone who had done and knew what you knew, and because I'd have listened to you a lot. And then you meet someone and you realise that they're just human. Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is I'm a disappointment in real life. Honestly, go away and work on that.
You've always exceeded my expectations. And the sad thing, I think, is as we progress in life, if we're not privileged enough to meet people, different people from different walks of life all the time, we become very set in our ways and we become less alive. We become less buoyant, as you said, and less confident because we're sort of going around in circles. And I think that what your work and the work that you do and the listening that you do and the books that I come across and the people I come across are actually at least an antidote to that.
Yeah,
you think?
Totally. And also, I think that silo mentality that we're now in, because tech tells us you like this, so you're going to like that. So we're in this ever-decreasing concentric circles. It's a really reduced version of what your soul might want to be. I think the only thing that you can really put into that now is culture. It is, you know, it is books and films and drama, but you've got to really reach out to find them. And I really notice with my kids just how that path of technology, those journeys, are just taking them further and further and further into their own world, just at a time when I think when we were the same age, young teenagers, we wanted our horizons to get broader and broader and broader. So, you know, we were both lucky. We've had good educations and we've had comfortable lives, haven't we? So we were at that place in our teenage lives where we could explore broader horizons. And that troubles me enormously. And, you know, if you don't hear other people talking about things in a different way, then how are you ever going to really make sure that you do know yourself? If you're only ever going to be confronted by a mirror image of yourself, how are you ever going to be stretched and really make sure that you are, I don't want to say your best self because I hate that phrase, it's so Gwyneth Paltrow, but just, you know, your true self. So, you know, the more books, the better, the more conversations, the better, the more difference, the better.
Really, I mean, what we've just been talking about is people listening to themselves.
Yes.
And listening to themselves is a good thing, just as well as listening to other people. And Kate, in her book, You're Not Listening, she talked about calling her inner voice, you know, the one that she has to listen to or control, Spanky. Do you have a Spanky? And do you have an inner voice? Do you talk to yourself? Do you have a? Have you developed one over the years that you listen to?
Oh, I love that, a Spanky. So yes, I do have an inner voice, and I really, really wish that it would just shut up sometimes. A lot of the time, actually. So my inner voice goes on at me all the time to question everything and then to try and do the right thing. And it's exhausting, really exhausting. And I do wish it would just pipe down. I wish it would have a little bit more of a listen phase itself. But I think lots of journalists do. And I think lots of radio presenters do. And it's quite funny, actually, unfortunately, the podcast I do with Jane Garvey, the inimitable Jane Garvey. We started off by only talking to people in broadcasting, and 9 out of 10 of them, you know, so from Jeremy Vine through to Scott Mills and Clara Amfo in between, everybody had a radio station in their childhood that they were performing on. So we have, just by nature of, you know, our profession, a constant voice that is just talking.
Like commentating,
yes,
on what you're doing.
All the time. I mean, I think that's why we've all ended up in, you know, in front of a proper microphone. Because we have these internal voices that we're just broadcasting in our heads anyway.
You were quite intense, and I mean that as a compliment.
I think it's probably too intense. Yeah, you can say it as a non-compliment if you like. Don't mind, Richard.
I remember all your stacked. This is another thing I was impressed by. In your loo or your bathroom, you had a stacked every copy of The Face, I think it was.
Oh, now you see, do you know what? So funny you say that.
Am I misremembering that?
No, you're not misremembering it at all, but those belong to my infinitely cooler sister.
Ah.
As I was never that cool. So my sister was just absolutely cool as ice. Yeah. I mean, just so on it like a car bonnet. And I really wasn't. The Face would have belonged to her. I would have been smash hits all the way.
Does that mean that everything that was cool about you was to do with your sister?
Yes.
Okay. Well, throughout that time, what has been, looking back, you know, you've done so many different things on radio and on air, on off air. What was the big insight, the big idea you had that you were really pleased that you did it, that actually took some persuading of that inner voice and listening to that inner voice, something that you did that had you not done it, you wouldn't be here today?
Oh, God, bloody hell, that's a big one, isn't it? Well, OK, so two things, and I'm not just saying this because it's you and I having this chat. I think we were so bold to leave GLR and go and do the ad break at 5 Live, Radio 5, as it was then, because we were naive, we were inexperienced, we were up against it, We had no track record and we had no idea of what was going to happen after that first series was commissioned. And I think looking back on it, the gumption that we had to do that and the fact that we pulled it off, and we did pull it off for both of us, it was a bit of a turning point, wasn't it?
Huge.
I love that about my life. I love that we did that. It was so daft. I'd never be that crazy again. So I really liked doing that. And that set me off on a whole different trajectory at Five Live. And then doing the listening project was a big leap because I'd never done a programme before that wasn't really largely based around me, actually. And that sounds so egotistical. Please do not leave this podcast at this moment because I'm just going to explain that. When you go into radio and, you know, if you want to be a radio presenter, you end up with your own show. That's what you want to do. So I'd largely done my own shows, and doing the listening project was just a completely different turn. It was off a main road, up a country lane kind of a turn, because it is totally about other people. And I remember somebody saying to me at the time, oh no, you shouldn't do that, you know, because it's not you, you know, it's not just about you. And just thinking, I really want to do this. I really, really, really don't care about that anymore. And they thought I was mad. And it's been one of the most enlightening, wonderful, lovely things I've ever done.
To take a left turn when everyone was maybe expecting you to take a right and it coming off.
Yes.
Gives you a certain confidence, doesn't it?
Yes, I think so. And also, do you know what? Just our world is really, really full of egos. And this is what's really lovely about Kate Murphy's book. You know, it's just, you don't have to go down that path. No. Stop. Just stop talking and always having an answer to everything and just really, really ingest everything else that's coming at you. It's a more pleasant place to be, actually.
Would you like a biscuit?
I would really like a biscuit because it's a big old-fashioned plain digestive.
Digestive.
Mm, yeah. Because where I live in East London, you seriously cannot get just
normal
the
biscuits.
Classic normal things anymore. This would be covered in charcoal,
yeah,
turmeric.
Yeah. Your Fortunately podcast with Jane Garvey, massive success. You tackle serious stuff like gender pay gap, and then you talk about garden hose repairs, and you've won comedy awards. How do you find what you might call the power in the silly?
Well, the comedy award thing was really funny because we didn't set out to be a comedy podcast and we were very surprised to turn up in a comedy category.
We didn't mean to be funny.
No. And I think when someone first said, you know, you're up for comedy podcast of the year, well, I'm not sure we took it well, actually, because we thought, no, we're extremely serious feminist journalists talking about the stuff of life.
Yeah.
But of course we're not. So, I mean, we do talk about serious things, Jane and I. Jane's the host of Woman's Hour at BBC Radio 4, and she's been heavily involved in the equal pay campaigning at the BBC. So we've talked about that quite a bit. We talk about where we are in our lives. We talk about the menopause. We talk about being parents. We talk about, you know, just stuff that's going on around us, and sometimes that's serious, but people don't come to it for serious. They come to it because we're just most of the time having a little bit of a laugh with each other. And Jane mercilessly takes the piss out of me,
yeah,
being the junior partner in the relationship, really knowing nothing. I mean, I, you know, literally having just wandered in off the street, got lucky, ended up sitting there. And I treat her with reverence and respect, and that's our shtick. And we have... Do you know what? In all seriousness, I look forward to Fortunately every week, and I know Jane does because it is a self-help group of two that other people seem to like listening to. And we don't take it very seriously, Richard. I mean, you could ask me more questions about it. I would really not be able to give you any more answers.
Well, what comes across is that you like and respect each other, but it's not too late.
Oh, Jane can't stand. She can't stand me. She's so annoyed.
Is she off? As soon as you stop recording,
yeah.
She's out the door.
Yep, totally. Yep. I'm like the runt in the litter that the big mum cat tries to roll over and pretend isn't there. Literally, that is what's happened. But I love her, so she can't get rid of me now. And all of the podcast world, this first wave of podcast success, aside from true crime, is about the joy of conversation. The pods that have done really well are more banterish than you will hear on mainstream radio, so we've just tapped into that.
But that's what I think the challenge is. You can't just have a conversation. And that's that. What you say, that saturation, I think, will retract again into curation and into choice and channels.
I agree.
It expands and contracts as we go on. And that's the challenge, isn't it? To have something interesting to say, whether it's about new nonfiction or just what I was doing this week or what
I think about. Also to just try and stay ahead of the curve and just sound different. When I look across all of the stuff that I'm downloading, you know, I kind of think, oh, yeah, that sounds like that. I mean, I've got about 20 political podcasts where people just chat about politics. And I kind of think, oh, no, I want them to do that a bit differently. I want some, but I don't know what it is. You know, I'm at the all-you-can-eat buffet, you know, with 27,000 different dishes in front of me, thinking, I want something different.
Then you end up with loads of chicken mayonnaise.
Well, you do, don't you? So then you just end up with some beetroot and a gherkin.
And a corn on the cob.
You go and sit back down and you go,
and everyone else has got these amazing things.
Yeah, they got all the lasagnas.
I feel the same thing about TED Talks. Incredibly innovative when they first started, but now I can't listen to or watch a TED Talk because it's so. I think there's even a skit. There's even a pastiche one out there that's really funny where they just literally just say what the person's going to say, and they go stand, pause, and look up towards the left. Consider your one's childhood, an experience you'd like to share. And it's like, it's almost like an instruction to.
Yes. And also it's just that very odd thing of thinking you've seen the light and then you realise that actually you've been on a train journey from London to Newcastle and you've seen the light 27 times. Can't remember a single bloody thing.
How many life-changing experiences can you have from Euston to York? Thank you for today.
It's a really lovely feeling, isn't it? Long-term friendships. Yeah. Really lovely. I mean, God knows I've tried to get rid of you. I've moved continents,
shake
Richard.
Me off.
And here I am, sharing your digestives.
I've geotagged you. Had an early geotag. Will you come back in 30 years' time?
No, I'll be absolutely dead as a... Do you remember how much we used to smoke?
Yeah.
We'll both be dead as a doornail by then, Kilgareth.
Thank you for choosing Kate Murphy's You're Not Listening. You can
it's
have that.
Absolutely my pleasure.
You can
pleasure.
Have that. That's
yeah,
not,
I'm
that's
taking
a
that
real
with me.
So that's it, Bokomi Podcast number one with the brilliant Fee Glover, featuring Omi from Kate Murphy and her book You're Not Listening, What You're Missing and Why It Matters. Fee Glover's Most Wanted was a Feast Collective production for Bokomi. The producer was Sarah Cudden and the executive producer was Kate Taylor, with music from Poddington Bear and Biscuits by Alan the Whippet. I'm Richard Kilgariff, and if you enjoyed my Bokomi podcast, please do rate, follow, subscribe and share using the buttons at your fingertips. And you can get a full list of my most wanted new nonfiction at bokomi.com or follow us on Twitter at Bokomi and on Instagram also Bokomi. Bye-bye.
Can I have another biscuit, please?